Good afternoon. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. I am your host, Nick Shutt, as always. Happy to have my buddy Matt Kilbane here with me today. Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Nick, man. Thanks for having me on, brother. I really appreciate it.
Dude, I appreciate you taking the time. I know we were just talking as we were kind of getting ready to go about how busy this entrepreneurship life is and all the stuff going on constantly all the time. But yeah, man, would you just, for the listeners out there, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of how you got here, man?
Oh yeah. So hey everybody at home or in the car or wherever you're listening to my voice at. So my name is Matthew Kilbane, and I have had an absolutely beautiful adventure of a career. I'm truly, truly blessed. I am an AI engineer, and I am also certified in artificial intelligence governance, and I have been elbow deep, as deep as I can get into the world of AI for going on 2 years now. Just like Nick said, how did I get here? My first career, I was a soldier, 19 years old. I was standing at the MEPS, Military Entrance Processing Center, and raised my right hand. And then that launched a 20-year career in the United States Army and Army Reserves that spanned 9.5 years active duty, 11.5 years in the reserves. I went from E1 to E6 in the United States Infantry, and then after that, commissioned as an ordnance officer, and then actually retired February of 2022. So that was my first career. From there, that led me actually into logistics, right? Because ordnance is a branch of logistics in the United States Army. And I was a logistician. I worked as a contractor for Delta Airlines and then as a logistician for the federal government, primarily with FEMA, doing disaster response and recovery, and all that fun stuff. If you remember Hurricane Maria, there was a hospital ship that was docked outside of San Juan, Puerto Rico. Well, you're talking to the guy that wrote that op order for the United States Navy. So one of the many, many cool things that I did during my time there to really help a lot of people. And then from there, logistics is nothing but algebra, right? You're solving for X 24/7, and IT is math and systems. So I just kind of segued into there. I kind of found my role in customer success management to start off, real basic business analyst stuff, because my background is I have a bachelor's of science in international business, and I have an MBA with a concentration in the same. And then, of course, a lot of stuff in finance, because that's all international businesses is moving money, really. So, anyways, and so yeah, I started out in the BA roles, customer success roles, moving over into project management, and then managing contracts. Hey, there's that finance again, managing the budgeting and business aspect of IT, which is its own little beast there. And then moving into program management with like systems and process modernization, because systems and processes, again, is nothing but logistics. Been Six Sigma certified for well over a decade. So luckily, I was working in the private sector for a company called Cencora, and I was helping on the business case aspect and use case aspect of a corporate native Gen AI instance. And that was back at the start of 2023, end of 2022. And from there, I saw the power of Gen AI for, I believe that at the time they were a Fortune 8 company, and I was hooked. I was sold. This is the future. This is solving all of those business processes and business problems that I've been dealing with for decades, and here it was. Here's the kit, and then I just went whole hog into it, man, ever since. And I've been loving the journey.
Awesome, man. No, that's
Yeah.
fantastic. Appreciate that. Thank you for your service as well. I know how much fun that can be, and like I know in my opinion, logistics is one of the most underappreciated parts of any military operation, and it's what separates the good ones
The
from the
winners from losers. Yeah.
literally the winners and the losers, good ones from the great ones. It's the backbone, power projection of keeping folks overseas maintained, deployed with the stuff that they need to do their job, whether that's in the case of sending the hospital ship down to Puerto Rico, doctors, humanitarian supplies, or if it's in a forward in a combat zone, bullets and ammo and food and everything. So it's a gargantuan job, and I think it's very underappreciated. So thank you again. And
Oh, appreciate it, dude. Thanks.
yeah, man. And I know you mentioned the future. at one as you were working with Gen AI and you realized that AI is the future and in early late 22, early 23. So we're talking one about them like a couple of months after ChatGPT goes live in England, right? And
Correct.
really before it really catches on and enters the mainstream, right? I think people really started hearing about it February, March of 20, maybe January, February, March, Q1 of 23 is when it really started getting big. And so you're right there, early, kind of early adoption as you look at ChatGPT and the release is a monument, a monumental moment in this. But I know when we spoke initially, we had talked a lot about, the potential for different futures as we utilize AI and look at AI as a tool in our society. So, on one side, I think you mentioned one is like a Star Trek future where it's more of a utopian society. And then the other one is like a altered carbon future where it's a dystopian society. When you think about AI as a, in society, how do you think we can kind of, or what step do you think we should take now to ensure we go one way or the other, and how do we ensure that we're moving towards more of a utopian as opposed to a dystopian future?
So it really defines. So in order to properly answer that question, we have to really define we, right? So we as in humanity, and then we as in the United States of America, right? Because that's where we're at, and that's where we're having this conversation. So I want to go ahead and answer that essentially from two frames of reference here. So we as in humanity, we are taking the steps, right? You see different legislations coming online, whether it be the EU AI Act. The United Nations General Assembly has a draft AI resolution in the works right now. Our neighbors to the north, Canada, they have the AI and Data Act, AIDA, right? And then you see, excuse me, all of these different legislative and regulatory bodies all around the world that are really stepping up, that understand how transformative this technology is. I've taken to saying that, hey, we were in the age of information, right? Now we're entering into the age of AI, right? Like that's really, really what's happening, because it is a fundamental game changer on so many levels, like systemically throughout our society with how our society functions. So, but then you have the United States, and where, the federal, legislative body has really absconded, from really putting forth that legislation that we as a nation state need in order to be successful, right? And what do you mean? And what do I mean by that? Well, it's really caveated around how AI is going to be used and employed throughout our society, right? And not just the American society, but also the global human society. And it really centers on ethical development. Right, ensuring that AI systems are used for good, inclusive and diverse development, right, so that it serves all people, that it eliminates the structural biases that are inherent within our system right now. And I know a common refrain from that will be like, well, Matt, what do you mean by structural biases? Or I know there's some common political pushback. Well, take the Pentagon, for example, the headquarters of the United States military. Right? They have double the number of bathrooms that they need for the population that works there. Why? Segregation. Flat out, right? The Pentagon was built during segregation, so they have restrooms. They have an adequate number of restrooms for whites, and they have an adequate number of restrooms for non-whites, right? So when I say like inclusive and diverse so that it serves everyone, and when I talk about, the structural and addressing the structural inequalities, like that's the stuff I'm talking about, right? And the how we use our language, and how we use these systems. And it's going to require really robust regulation, like I was saying, on the national, international, and sometimes even the local level, right? And to ensure that, nefarious actors are not able or not able are legally prohibited, and then there are consequences to it, from employing artificial intelligence in nefarious ways. And then it's going to take cross-sector collaboration, because artificial intelligence is something that touches every single sector that you could imagine, everything from agriculture to call centers to space exploration to teaching. And I'm when I say teaching, I'm talking everything from pre-K all the way up through, PhD graduate studies. Every sector that you can imagine can leverage AI, and there's opportunities there. And because you need, and because it's going to touch everything, that everything needs to come together, right, and collaborate, And then also to focus on the good of what AI can deliver. You know, the fact that, you know, we can use artificial intelligence, you know, to bootstrap, like you said, small businesses, you know, and I know we've kind of touched on, you know, hey, you know, there's so much stuff to do and so much subject matter out there that I have to know in order to be successful as a small business owner, you know, and as an entrepreneur. Well, guess what? Generative artificial intelligence can assist with that, right? Can assist with those budgeting processes, those HR processes, the procurement, the IT, you know, to really enable the success of the individual. And by lifting up the individual, we lift up the community. So those are the key steps that we need, is really that ethical development, the inclusive and diverse development to make sure everyone is properly served by this new technology and no one is left behind. The robust regulation and legal framework that we're going to need to be successful, that cross-sector collaboration to bring us closer and together like never before, and then also focusing on the good aspects of what AI brings to the table, while of course taking steps to mitigate the negative.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think? I really appreciate that, man. And I did not know that about the Pentagon with segregation
Yeah.
of the bathrooms. It makes a lot of sense, you know, start thinking about it. But, you know, as where do you think, how do you think that, and where do you think Congress should be prioritizing, you know, kind of the teeth in any legislation around AI? Because like as with anything, any new industry, any new technology that's game changing, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot of fear as it relates to job losses and like an evolving and changing workforce. But then also in this case, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot, and there needs to be a lot. I think the there's going to be a lot more opportunity for bad actors to scam and, you know, target with scams people, like vulnerable folks out there, as well. And because again, with the generative nature of this technology, it is going to, you know, it's not that it makes it easier, but it makes it easier to, you know, operate at scale with less you know, less personnel, right? And so how do you think, where do you think we should be focused from a legislative perspective? And where do you, what do you think that some of these, you know, these pieces of legislation international are doing well, and what do you think they're doing poorly?
Great. So, where the focus needs to be now, typically when we hear legislation, right, it's typically framed in, hey, this is what you can't do with it. But I think with artificial intelligence, we need to reframe ourselves, and it's the legislation dictating, and like I said, this goes back to my previous answer, focusing on the good, what you can do with it, right? So if we focus our legislation on protecting the rights and the lack of manipulation on the individual, right? Then that also leaves that entire breadth for, you know, technological advancement, for discovering new things, and for how we utilize this technology, right? So when I think of, in my opinion, when I think of the legislation that, you know, we in the United States would need, it really focuses, like I said, on the individual, protecting the rights and the privacy of the individual. Because what a lot of people don't realize is that there are two yous out there right now. There is the physical, corporeal you, right, that we're having this conversation, and then there's the digital you. There's all your data, right?
Right.
Because if I had a, if you know, if you know, a child popped into existence right now, you know, that child from the moment of its birth has a digital footprint, Social Security, birth certificate, medical records, right? And it all exists in databases somewhere. And as that child grows, you know, that digital footprint grows until literally there's, you know, for lack of a better phrase for this conversation, there's a digital you, right? And so the regulation really should concentrate on protecting the individual and protecting the community against nefarious actors, right? Not so much saying that this is what you can do with it, but this is what you can't do with it, right? You can't assault the rights of the individual. You cannot manipulate. You cannot take someone's data and then use that to make a digital copy of themselves, you know, to nefariously act within, you know, the, you know, the various systems, you know, that we have in our society, right? You know, so I mean, you can't create a digital copy of Nick and then use that digital copy, you know, to rob somebody's Bitcoin wallet, right? Which is a possible crime, you know, now and definitely in the future. And so what do I think that's going to do? I think that's really going to open up all of the avenues that humanity is going to need for innovation and exploration of this new technological space. And it's also going to protect your privacy and the privacy, and security of you and your loved ones. And we already see the effects of this lack. I'm sorry, not the lack of legislation. I apologize. We already see the effects of what artificial intelligence has done on our general population. Just look at the recent U.S. Department of Justice indictments, sorry, against a company that was funding a lot of these right-wing influencers to disturb the election process in the United States of America. With all of the disinformation. I mean, I even think the current presidential candidate posted some fake AI images of another presidential candidate, right? I mean, and this is going to continue to move forward, right? And so, as Uncle Ben said in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility, right? And so, as artificial intelligence proliferates throughout our society to where we're even going to have our edge devices, our endpoint devices right here, have localized artificial intelligence instances through localized large language models, we're going to need the protections for ourselves against literally every other person, right? Because we're all going to have that type of power. We're all going to be able to operate at that kind of scale to create these deep fake videos, deep fake audios, and then push them out into society. And not trying to be rude here, but in order to paraphrase the late great George Carlin, who's one of my favorite comedians of all time, half the people you meet, brother, they're going to be dumber than average because that's the definition of average, right? So not only do we need to protect ourselves from each other, we also need to, for some individuals, we need to protect ourselves from ourselves, right? Because you already see it in society, and you already see where these deep fakes just have people completely confused. And like I said, especially with generative artificial intelligence, revenge porn, nobody wants that, right? And so, and that's unfortunately, those are the nefarious actors, and those are those elements of evil in our society that we have to safeguard against. Now, what legislation, is out there that is currently doing really, really well? Brother, the EU AI Act is the gold standard. And to be quite frank, in my personal and humble opinion, it is saving the bacon of American citizens, right? Because if you're a multinational corporation, which is really every company with an LLM out there that's, scraping the data and practicing it, whether it be Google, Meta, OpenAI, Microsoft, Apple, et cetera, you operate in the European Union. Flat out do. And if you operate in the European Union, guess what? Then you have to abide by their laws and their data protection standards. Now, are they enforceable in the United States for those customers? No, they're not. Or actually, hold on. That's a legal scholar issue. I'm sorry. Don't crucify me on that one, internet. But still, the fact that those protections have to be in place at that multinational corporation and multinational actor level, is we, the United States citizens, are reaping the benefits of that from a second hand, from a secondary effect, second order effect of that. So that's where we need to look. Also, again, our brothers and sisters to the north, the Canadian AI and Data Act. Yes, absolutely. Because remember, Canada, United States, and Mexico, we're not called NAFTA anymore, but it's just the second iteration of that post the Trump administration. All those companies that interact across that line on a map, because that's all an international border is, have to abide by those data protections. So right now, the people of the United States of America are being very well served by our allies and other nation state actors that have taken the steps necessary to begin regulating artificial intelligence as it should be.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, man. I think I think that I haven't read through every word of the EU AI legislation, but I think first you're right that we are absolutely benefiting from a lot of the requirements that these folks are putting into that the EU is making these larger organizations making them abide by, right? I'm curious, and this is not something I expect you to be able to answer, but I'm curious how long that will last and how long until there's going to be localized models based on your where you are. How is that going to change things, right? I don't know if
About
it's
3 to 3 years.
couple, you think 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, so what actually, do you want to dive into that line of thinking? All right,
I'm
sure.
curious,
So
man.
pay attention because you're going to start to see it for this holiday shopping season. All right. So, how you have CPUs and you're used to GPUs? All right. Well, you're going to start seeing endpoint devices, endpoint being where IT meets humanity, your phones, laptops, tablets, et cetera. with what's called NPUs, neural processing units, which are
Cool.
going to allow, because right now the way the system architecture goes, and this is a very dumbed down version. Again, I'm sure there's a SME out there that's going to pillory me for saying this stuff, but that's fine. I can take it. Is that the CPU, is the clock for your computer, right? It is the task organization of this is how thing goes. All right. Well, the GPU is the math guy. The GPU, right, and NVIDIA stock price is really what's handling a lot of these advanced mathematical calculations. However, the architecture, excuse me, isn't really the best suited at handling Boolean strings, right? Which is really what generative AI is. It's Boolean algebra taken to the nth degree with billions and billions of petaflops of processing power on it. So, but with the advent of NPUs, right? And it's going to be first, second, third generation, but by the third or fourth generation, man, think of Moore's law, right? How fast this scales, how good we get, right? Because remember, we're standing on the shoulders of giants, as far as technological progress. We're already experimenting, and by we, I mean humanity, we're already experimenting with localized and personalized LLMs. Right, that I mean, I read an article this morning about one university student. I think he was one of the techs, Georgia Tech, MIT, Caltech, one of them, that put an LLM on a T86 calculator.
Wow.
That's possible, brother. I mean, was it efficient? No. Did it burn through batteries like crazy? Yes. But that's where we're at right now at that bleeding edge of edge AI. Right. And then as the neural processing units, right, because I remember they're going to be coming this holiday season. Look for them on all of Microsoft stuff, IBM, Apple's going to have them. You already start to see these Google phones, like that's just the first gen, my friend. And it's just going to iterate to get better. So give it about 2 to 3 or 3 to 4 years. And, Nick's going to be walking around with his personalized LLM based off of all of his personal data, or he could be for a price.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. And as you start to, as that starts to scale, and the MPU start to get better and more efficient, how do you think that's going to affect the so-called Internet of Things, is where we have all of our devices, like where you have a connected refrigerator and things like that? How do you think that that will affect all of that?
Oh, it. I, so to me, and again, this is focusing on the good. I think it's going to be a beautiful future, right? Because it's going to be so. It's going to be like a personalized level of existence. You know what I mean? It's so your personal AI digital assistant, based off your own personal LLM and all of your own personal data. You're going to have it to where the house cools and warms based on your own biometric data from your biometric feedback sensors, right? You're going to have it to where the refrigerator, that endpoint device senses what's in there, and you just say, hey, I would like to eat X, Y, and Z this week, and then here's your grocery list already pre-populated and the order sent off to Amazon Fresh, right? Like that's the type of stuff, that's the future that's possible, to where you on your phone can take a picture of a menu, and based off of your personalized medical data, it automatically highlights anything you could be allergic to. And based off of your own current biometric data, as well as prescription data and medical history, can recommend the top 5 meal options that work best with your own physiology. Right? Like that's the
Incredible.
future that we could have, as we proliferate this processing power and leverage this information. Because it really goes down to what Gen AI actually is. And do you mind if we kind of get into that and I just use an
Go ahead,
analogy
man.
here?
Oh, go
All
ahead.
right. So this is how I like to phrase it, and I'm sure, different strokes for different folks, but just kind of go with me on this. So the internet is for, by and large, the conglomerate or the agglomeration of nearly the entirety of human knowledge, right? You want to know what story Scheherazade told on her 997th night? Go to the internet, right? You want to know what the temperature is in Milwaukee 5 years ago to the day? Go on the internet, right? So you and you know, in Carta Britannica, you know what I'm talking about. So we're used to the search engine. Right. So when you Google something or you put something in Bing or you go ask Jeeves, you're fishing, right, for information in the internet. with a fishing pole. It's a single hook, right? And that's that search engine optimization and all that stuff. You're like, give me a largemouth bass. And then you go and you fish, do your search query. And then every one of those lines that you see on Google, every one of those search results is another cast of the line. Hey, is this it? Is this the one you want? Is this the one you want? So that's kind of what we're used to. That's the power of what we're used to for the internet and how we leverage it. Well, this is how it's changing. So when we take I'm sorry, a ChatGPT or an OpenAI, a Strawberry or something like that, it's essentially through a prompt, right? Because I'm sure most of your audience has heard through prompt and prompt engineering and writing a prompt, is that we tokenize that prompt, which means we break it up into separate little hooks. Okay. And so if Googling something is like fishing with a fishing pole, using a generative AI instance like ChatGPT or something of that nature is fishing with a drag line, right? So, which is nothing but a line with all these different hooks, and we're just pulling stuff and pulling stuff. And we get all these many, all a lot of fish at one time, more than we're used to. And then sometimes, you know, instead of catching like 20 bass, we'll catch 19 bass and a halibut, right? And so that'll be a hallucination. So, Googling, fishing with a fishing rod, generative AI, ChatGPT, you're fishing with a drag line. But now we're getting to the point where oh my gosh, and of course, while we're talking, I'm forgetting it, where through RAG, there we go, response augmented generation, where we utilize all of the other prompts, right? And to create a contextual search of the essentially the agglomerated mass of human knowledge that's an internet, where you, so drag line, drag line, drag line, drag line, and then so essentially with RAG, we're combing the internet with a net. You see what I'm saying? And so that's where we're going. So right now, at what would be the early adopter phase of generative AI with RAG, you know, we're getting to the point now where we're culling so much information at once, specific information, and then that is really where we're at. So when we Google, we're fishing with a fishing line. When we use ChatGPT, we're fishing with a drag line. And when we use RAG, which is again, that's, you know, one of the coming things that's getting real popular now, we're fishing the internet with a net, right? And that's the amount and complexity of information we're catching, which is why it seems so scary to people that, you know, we can now, you know, say, tell me a story about dragons, and then boom, here's your 20 chapter novel, you know, and it's just going to get better. And as processing power increases and the availability of all of these endpoint devices and the sensors that to sense our world increases, the possibilities are nearly endless for Nick and your children and your grandchildren's children to lead an amazing life that is the subject of fairy tales for us.
Absolutely. No, I mean, just like people that, just like our grandparents and great grandparents, we're living
Yeah.
life as a fairy tale to them, right? You know, and then, I mean, a great example that pops to mind is Nikola Tesla and him saying that, you know, I think in the like, I think like a little over 100 years ago or 100 years ago ish, he was predicting, yeah, essentially, you know, video communications across long
Yeah.
distance, right? I'm not saying he was right about everything. I'm saying he was right about that, right? And you know, and then I one thing that you did mention, I appreciate the explanation and the differentiation between a search engine, a you know, an LLM, and when you drop a RAG on top of an LLM and use that to filter. Yeah, one thing you mentioned when you're talking about having how we'll have our own personal AI customized to us that understands us and our preferences on all of our devices, and then we'll be able to utilize that potentially to influence homes and houses and all like and you know and customize things and give us just like frankly a level of convenience and ease that has been science fiction for a long time. I do get that that's the positive view of it, right? If we don't get a lot of this upfront legislation or this upfront in if we're focused on the wrong things and it's not like an individual focus, but say it's a corporatism focus or it's a profitability focus or it's a, you know, God forbid, it's an authoritarian focus, how could some of these things, like how could that go wrong? And you know, how what's a like a dystopian future where, you know, AI is being used to reinforce or is being used to propagate a negative, propagate negativity or control or something like that instead of individual rights.
Oh, sure. So this is where we get into, that really that science fiction realm of the negative, right? And, we kind of brought up earlier, that altered carbon, right? Where you have that a massive, massive accumulation of wealth at the very, 0.00001%, right? And that's already happening now. I mean, look at the economic data. The economic stratification is quite frankly the worst it's ever been, right? Like there is a discrepancy that hasn't been seen, since the Gilded Age, and it's even worse than the Gilded Age, right? But we have this massive, this propaganda engine, right, by the people with means to the people without means that literally, it's very self-serving, and I mean, maximizing shareholder value is, in my opinion, a very, very empty way to live your life. Right. I mean, that was definitely, the call to arms of previous generations, right? And the economy they set up for themselves. And you can see it all throughout the deregulation of the financial markets in the Reagan era. You can see it all throughout the proliferation of the police state, thanks to the Patriot Act in the George Bush era. You can see it, let's see, by the over $7 trillion in debt during the Trump administration that just went straight to tax breaks for the ultra wealthy, and I mean, there's a reason why there's rampant inflation now, I mean, the piper's got to be paid. And so all that will continue to snowball and continue to snowball and continue to snowball until, it's almost like you're reading the time machine, right? Where it's the Morlocks and the Eloys. And unfortunately, the vast majority of us are going to be Morlocks, for lack of a better phrase. And that's why, and taking it back to something we previously talked about, was that, the regulation and legislation that we need must focus inward, right, on protecting the individual's, the sanctity of one's data, the sanctity of one's privacy, and the ability of the individual to move through society, without being, negatively acted upon by nefarious actors who just wish to gain more and more for themselves. Because to me, and this is just on a personal note, I mean, it's almost a level of, like psychopathy to have this, level of hoarding. Because whenever you read any work of science fiction or fantasy or anything, I mean, Smaug is never the good guy, right? Like over here, I live in, we're in the Washington, D.C. metro area. And if there was a gorilla at the Smithsonian National Zoo that hoarded every single banana from all the other gorillas, we would be like, what's wrong with that gorilla? But here, we, in American society and throughout a lot of the world, we praise the people that hoard the wealth and the resources to the detriment of others. I mean, the current economic climate or the current economic state that we have in the United States of America, where there is so much abundance, is a direct product of, the New Deal and the wealth redistribution that occurred in the post-World War eras, along with the fact that we were really the only major industrial base left standing on the planet that wasn't firebombed or nuked. So the United
Firebomb
States,
and nuked, you know,
yeah,
is
firebomb,
not
sometimes
mutually
both.
exclusive out there in Japan, you know?
Right? Right. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, look at what happened to Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and then look at what the firebombing of Tokyo or the firebombing of Dresden. So, anyway, so the global industrial base was decimated post-World War II, and thanks to the economic policies of the New Deal through FDR and the wealth redistribution, that's, and the GI Bill, the spread of education, the establishment of the Department of Education, like all of these levers to really raise up the American society and increase our prosperity, have been degraded over time. I mean, we just got done with an administration to where, they want to get rid of the Department of Education. Like, I mean, really? But then again, that's a different conversation, but that's how nefarious actors act upon our society to essentially act in the detriment of the whole, And I mean, there's many lenses you can look at it, I mean, it's quite sad. And I think that the regulation and legislation that we need in order to, for our society, and not just the United States of America, but humanity as a whole, to prosper into the coming years and to deliver that prosperity and those advantages to future generations who will never know we exist, is our responsibility. And we need to start acting on it. Or else we are going to get that altered carbon. We are going to get that time machine of Morlocks and the Eloys, or just as worse, look at the French Revolution. Look at the response to the Gilded Age, right? You can only step on and impoverish so many people for so long before they rise up and tear you down.
Yeah, man.
And then that's, of course, I think, what is it, the third or fourth estate, when it comes to French literature, in that context. So, yeah.
No,
It's
man, and I appreciate that, and I tend to agree with you. I think that when you look at, I think there's a balance. Everything's in
Yeah.
balance. When you look at, economic policy over the last, call it 100 years or so,
Yeah.
I mean, the data says the economy historically does better under, under Democrats than it does under Republicans from a
Agreed.
balance perspective. And I mean, that's just what the data says, I think.
I mean, yeah, it's economic fact. I mean,
Correct.
it's not a political opinion,
Well,
and it's
but I
because of that
mean,
wealth redistribution,
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. When you give a tax break to a corporation, they're just going to use more stock, use it to buy back more stock, and essentially move that money from the government into the shareholders. And by and large, their wealthy shareholders are the ones that own the company, right? And or higher ups within the company, or private equity, what have you. And I mean, like it you're right. There is only so far that we can go before things get break down
Yeah.
at a societal level, right? And and when you give money back to let's just say those that are in, let's call it, the bottom 70% of income, now that money gets spent right away and goes right back into the economy, because an economy is good when money is moving, when things are changing hands.
Yes,
But
the velocity of money. Yeah.
I mean, I also think that to quote somebody you've already quoted, one of my favorite comedians as well, George Carlin, is they want they want people just smart enough to run their machines, but not smart enough to realize how bad they're getting fucked.
Agreed.
And so, in from that perspective, like going about, abolishing the Department of Education would make sense. But I think that all of us, and I mean all Americans, because I'm talking about this country, benefit from our infrastructure, whether that's roads,
Unequivocally, unequivocally.
roads, bridges, tunnels, power infrastructure, internet infrastructure, education, when you start talking about, human capital from an infrastructure perspective, and we all have a responsibility to take care of the infrastructure that we all benefit from. But to bring this kind of back towards AI, I just touched on power infrastructure, and I just saw over the last couple of days there was a an announcement that the there's a nuclear power plant. I think it's Three Mile
Mile
Island.
Island,
That had been decommissioned in 2019. It's the site of, and I'll be free, I don't know all of the details, but it's the site of the worst nuclear reactor accident here in this country, right? So what do and all of that's being brought back online, and it was announced that it's going to come back online, I want to say, by 2028, and that Microsoft will be buying 100% of the power output to power data centers. And that's not the only one that has been brought back on. It's not the only power plant that has been brought back online. There's been a big resurgence in coal power as well. And we're spinning coal power plants back up to feed the power demand and power generation demand of these new data centers. What are your thoughts on that, and kind of what are your thoughts about bringing Three Mile Island back online?
So we are in, and what I, and this is what I think, right? And I'm sure everyone else has their own opinion. We are in a very nascent stage regarding energy consumption and utilization for artificial intelligence, right? It's kind of the maxim that comes to mind is, you have to work harder before you can work smarter. And what do I mean by that? So we, and by we, I mean, society, we lose so much of our power through, heat dissipation, right? We use so much of our power through resistance, right? Just through material resistance. That's why we're searching for room temperature superconductors and all that other stuff, right? So the amount of power that we're leveraging is representative, of the amount of power that we actually need to use to run these data centers if they were more efficient. However, this is where artificial intelligence comes into play to make society better. I think since the advent of really the popularization of AI, I think there's been something like 400,000 or something new discoveries within material sciences. There's new discoveries every single day within medicine, and for efficiency gains for photovoltaic cells and energy transmission and how we can do it better. And now we're looking at wireless, and you've already seen wireless chargers where you can take your cell phone and put it on the little dock, and now we're extending that, and energy transfer via quantum entanglement once you get to the real sci-fi stuff, right? So, and artificial intelligence is enabling that, right? So I would not be surprised that in the next 10 to 15, possibly 20 to 25 years, the humanity in and of itself reaches a peak energy utilization, right? For the amount of energy that it really takes to power the age of AI, because advances in material sciences, advances in manufacturing techniques, advances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are all going to enable the capitalization, of these technologies to reduce our overall energy footprint. So I think, that when we say, oh, the data centers are sucking up all this energy, well, yeah, right now, but
Absolutely.
give it a minute. The humans are on it. We're fake. Because listen, I guarantee you right now, Microsoft does not want to pay that electric bill. Nobody would.
No,
Right.
no,
So,
1,000%.
yeah, I mean, hey, we're spinning up a couple nuclear reactors, but I mean, do you really want that on your CapEx? I don't think that's a write-off, buddy. I don't think your power bill's a write-off. But so, yeah, so I see that as a very, very temporary problem, temporary in the grand scheme of things. That'll be quickly in the grand scheme of things, phased out and rendered moot by technological advancement of how we do things and what we're doing. And as in regards to spinning up 3 Mile Island, I mean, honestly, I don't even bat an eye at that, brother. I really don't. I mean, that is an accident that occurred, I believe, what, in the 70s, right? In the 60s or 70s, somewhere around there. Well, it's 2024, man. So that was what, 50 years ago now? I mean, we've come a long way since then, and considering the regulations and the caveats and constraints around nuclear power generation, especially in the United States of America, yeah, no, I don't even blink. It's just like, all right, cool, spin it up, make sure it's good, get the blessing from the, what is it, the International Atomic Energy Administration, and then our own Department of Energy, and we're good to go. And besides, I mean, I think it's actually been a few decades since the United States built a new nuclear power plant. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, I mean, sure, spin it back up. We need it. It's clean. It's one of the safest forms of energy out there. And, I mean, what, you get more nuclear radiation or more, correction, more radiation out of a banana than you do standing next to a cooling tower on a reactor site. So I'm
Absolutely.
game.
No, and I think personally I'm inclined to agree with you, and that's been my argument as it relates to climate change for a long time, is that we're gonna innovate our way through it, right? I mean, I think the catalytic converter is a great example of innovating our way through something. Now, and coming up with these small fixes and changes to increase efficiency, right? And make our machines better. I also am a proponent on, and I'm not an expert on power generation and different types of power plants, but I'm a proponent of nuclear power and have been for a long time. I think that properly done and properly maintained and properly built, it is, when you look at the density of a material utilized, right?
Oh,
The
absolutely.
amount of a plutonium required to run a nuclear reactor is far, far, far less from a volume perspective than running a coal power plant or pretty much any other power plant, right? Like, obviously we'll take like dams and using dams to generate power, and that's a different conversation, right? That's not feasible to operate at scale, right? Just because there aren't a lot of rivers. There's not enough rivers that have that to really do, as far
The
as I know.
hydropower.
Yeah,
Yeah.
the
Well, and keep
hydro.
in mind the impact on the environment, dude, because when you dam up a river, you got to flood the valley, dude.
Yep. Absolutely. No, and I think that, properly done, and but I also think that there's a lot of scare tactics in as it relates to marketing of nuclear power, and people hear nuclear and they think of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and that's it, right? Like, they don't. And I mean, back to the education of people, but hey, that's a whole other thing. And
Agreed.
I do 1000% agree that innovation is our way through. We have to innovate to solve these problems, and that's also, as we innovate, we're going to create more opportunity, we're going to create more jobs, right? But like, that's not all of it. We're going to create better jobs, and and we're going to redeploy our workforce in different ways, and there's going to be new opportunities and new things to do. But we need to be very intentional about it, and we need to make sure that we're prioritizing the right things. And as I completely agree, Microsoft, nobody wants to pay the power bills for data centers. That's a cost of doing business, and that's an expense on the balance sheet that you, if you can reduce, is great. So I completely agree with you, man.
I mean, and don't forget, like with all these, like, with coal, I mean, I just the second, I mean, people, I think, have a very hard time calculating the second and third order effects, right? I mean, head on over to West Virginia and look at all the graveyards filled with people that died of black lung and the effects that had on not only them, but their families and extended families and the infrastructure of West Virginia. Entire mountains in China that no longer exist that have just been dug, that are now holes in the earth, and you have to have sun, what is it? You have to have sunsets and sunrises projected onto side of buildings in Beijing, during the summer when, the wind isn't blowing all the cold, all the coal exhaust away from the city. I mean, no one wants to live like that. So
No, completely agree with
nuclear
you.
and solar.
Absolutely, brother. And so, how? What do you? What? And as we start thinking about, let's just say, education. How do you think we're going to utilize AI to reshape education? And how do you think it will change the experience of students and educators on a day-to-day basis?
Well, now, so keep in mind, everything I'm about to say is predicated on the principle of human in the loop, right? So that yes, we have generative AI, and it is an amazing tool to help with learning and the gathering and consolidation of information and the digestion of information for, from an individual perspective, right? And so that's not going to be really I think the game changer or the change in focus, is that we're still going to need that teacher, that instructor, that human instructor to one, filter the information, making sure that it's accurate and contextualized within the context of the lesson, of like, say we're learning American civics or we're learning Western history, and we don't, somebody's not reading about Napoleon's march, into Moscow, and then, Lu Bai pops up, right, from ancient China. So we're still going to need that, right, because generative AI in and of itself is a mathematical algorithm, and sometimes, the math is wrong, and that's just happens. However, it'll allow for a more bespoke, educational experience, and tailored to the learning and cognitive abilities of the student, right? So imagine, if you will, a world in which, you are combating literacy, and this is actually an app I'm working on right now, so it's top of mind, to where, you have a child, and the young lady says, "Tell me a story about a princess slaying a dragon." Well, guess what? Automatically, the generative AI instance starts to generate that type of story, right, at her reading level. And so she reads aloud the words that are coming across her cell phone or her tablet. And then in real time, that generative AI instance can then tailor the complexity of that, of what she is reading, and gradually increase it to increase her reading level. Now, that is going to allow for increases in literacy that far and away just blow out of the water this rote, everyone open up your books to chapter two and everyone reads a few sentences, right? Because you're going to be getting that real-time tailored feedback. Now, do that for every single subject. Do that for mathematics. It is a real-time personalized tutor to get you from point A to point excellent, right? In the shortest amount of time possible based on your cognitive abilities. And then also keep in mind that, that the accessibility of sometimes, it's very, very hard to communicate with students that say have a learning disability or are just neurodivergent, like if they're autistic, right? And so we can then use artificial intelligence to tailor lesson plans, but not only the context of the lesson, but also the way that it is taught to the individual. So that way that, these people, these tiny little people are no longer left behind in our society. And then they carry those artificial intelligence instances and AI agents with them throughout life to help them communicate and interact with society as a whole. Really, that whole rising tide lifts all ships. So that's where I see its impact on education, is that the educational aspect of it will be tailored to the individual and allow the individual to progress up the cognitive line, I'm sorry, up that, that cognitive hierarchy, right? Of like elementary, middle, high, collegiate, et cetera, at their own pace and more efficiently than we have now, where we have one teacher with a with an underfunded classroom and 5-year-old books, that are torn up and, all these things that they're really not too great about, what happens when you fund your education through local taxes instead of federalizing it. So yeah.
Yeah, man. No, and I actually agree with you. I also think that it will allow, because I like there are a lot of, it will allow the education to be tailored in ways that meet people where they are from a learning style perspective. I can, speaking for myself, I always had trouble in classes and just in class in general because I to have trouble paying attention when people are lecturing me on things that I don't find interesting. And but at the same time, if you involve me in something and it's activity and we're doing something, I'm going to learn far, far better, right? And that's just that's how I learn. And everybody learns differently. And I think that it will allow, allow that. And I also think it'll take some of the more, I'm not going to say dry subject matter because I think that, different things are dry to different people. But I think that it'll allow you to take some of these other things when you other subjects when you start talking about like photo generation and video generation and allow and I mean history is a great example. It's like instead of reading about or t interacting with an AI asking about Napoleon's campaign in Russia, you can theoretically have AI create a have a recreation in a VR in a VR headset that you watch as part of your history class, which would be far more engaging than just reading about it for a lot of folks, right? Especially for children that are used to this level of interaction, like used to interacting with technology in these ways.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. And that is, and like you said, meeting people where they're at is really what artificial intelligence in the realm of education is really the big benefit of it, right? And so, I know that during the Bush administration, we had the No Child Left Behind legislation here in the United States of America. Well, this is truly No Child Left Behind, right? Because every child is brought along at their own pace. You know what I mean? And so yeah, no, I fully agree with the the inclusion of artificial intelligence in education. But again, remembering to keep the human in the loop, right? To keep that professional educator there to guide and steer and to ensure, that when we're teaching history, that it's historically accurate. That the that VR simulation, of Napoleon's, march into Russia doesn't include, Hannibal's elephants. You know what I mean? Just to make
Absolutely.
sure that we're on track. Yeah.
Although I absolutely watch that movie, I'm not going
Oh, that'd be so cool.
to lie to you. I'd 1,000% watch a movie where Hannibal was along for that ride, right? I mean, legit. Again, back to logistics. Logistics aside, right? Because that, I mean, that's what took that whole campaign down. But, and then, as you know, obviously, I know you've spent a lot of time in government and in larger organizations. You recently came into small business over the last couple of years. Where first, how has that transition been going from larger organizations into small business first? And second, Matt, how do you as a small business utilize AI to help reduce your administrative, just your workload in general? And how do you see that, kind of continuing and progressing?
All right, so going so to answer, so I heard a three-part question.
Yes.
So going from large organizations to much smaller organizations, the main thing that I've encountered really is, you have great people and you have, not so great people, regardless of what size or complexity of organization you have. The main inhibitor, or I'm sorry, not inhib it is an inhibitor, but the main difference I've seen is the inhibitor of resources and resource allocation, right? Like a small business owner, I just do not have the time. I do not have the resources to do everything that I know needs to be done because I'm used to organizations where, there's this massive financial department, the budgeting and the PPB&E cycle, and then that feeds directly into our operational capabilities, and your functional lines of business marry with your operational lines, and like all this high level strategy of, move, steering the aircraft carrier, if you will, to use an analogy. But And when you get to the resource scarcity of small businesses, you don't have, that finance department to lean on, or that procurement section, or that IT help desk, when you as a small business owner are trying to make it work, right? But what that leads to is resourcefulness and making it work. And so, and in that regard, that also is an advantage, because the smaller you are, the more agile and nimble you are to respond to market forces and situations as they develop, right? It's much easier to conference with myself and just myself, than it is to go back to the team, because what I forget who said it, but to paraphrase a maxim, what is it? A committee is the only organism on the planet with multiple heads but no brain. You know what I mean? And trying to get a decision and get some forward movement there, or lateral movement, or any movement, can be really trying. But taking it down into, what are some of the constraints of a small business and how AI can help with that? Well, dude, I offload a lot of my back-end business functions to artificial intelligence. You know what I mean? Like I, you know, if I need accounting, well, guess what? I've got my own Copilot that I pay for, and that's hooked into my Excel. So guess what happens? And it's direct and linked directly when I go into my software development, because I use Visual Studio Code and then GitHub Copilot. So guess what's there? And so I leverage artificial intelligence to perform a lot of those functional lines of business, and how, they can enable me to be successful. Like for procurement, hey, this is the proposal, or this is the solicitation, write a proposal for business development. Okay, IT, technical aspects of it. Hey, I have this problem, this problem, this problem. Gen AI, give me an answer. And is it 100%? No, it's not, because we're not there, right? But this is the cool thing about artificial intelligence, Nick, and not a lot of people realize this, but it's nonetheless very, very true. The AI, the last time you used AI, that's the worst AI you're ever going to use in your life. Flat out, because it's just getting better and better. And then, I'm sorry, what was the third part of the question?
How do you see this continuing to evolve over the next couple of years, and where do you think? Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. Here we go, brother. All right. So I see it as incredibly empowering, right? Because as I'm sitting here and we're talking about how I'm using, for my back-end business functions or my functional lines of business, artificial intelligence to augment, my skill set, right? Like I know what needs to be done from this massive organizational perspective, and my resources at my disposal, I can use artificial intelligence to get there, right? To move that needle. Well, I mean, imagine, if you will, something like let's say the Incorporated Man series. We're talking sci-fi again, where, you are your own corporation, right? Because guess what? Your artificial intelligence can stand up an LLC just like that, have it registered in SAMS, have it registered with your state, get your certificate of in good standing, have all your taxes and everything filed, and have the APIs, with your bank account, so that way you can just send the money at the drop of a hat to pay your taxes or to pay the fees, hook up your water, your cable, and like literally have all of that spun up that it takes you and me hours and hours and hours to do. In 10 to 20 years, like that. So you, as you walk through life, like when you're walking down the street and like say you wanted to buy a donut from and some coffee from Krispy Kreme, Does Nick want to buy that donut or coffee? Or is that walk a business, a legitimate business expense? And then you spin up your own LLC and then buy that coffee on your bit underneath your business account that just generated 30 seconds ago and then use it as a tax write-off, right? But then we get into the second order effects of that, what I call business in a box, right? Where if you have the capability, because, sorry to go back, legislation in the United States of America has been drafted, especially since the Citizen United ruling by the Supreme Court, where money is speech, to benefit large businesses and large organizations. So now imagine if through the application of personalized AI instances, you got to leverage all of those tax breaks that large businesses get. You got to leverage all of those resources that large businesses have as you move through the world. Right? It's an entirely different game when Nick can either be Nick the human, right? Walking through and conducting himself through life, and Nick with the resources and capabilities of a Fortune 500 company walking through, right? And so that's where we're getting. And then that's when we get back to the regulation and legislation, is we're going to have to redesign a lot of our tax code. Is going to have to change due to these pressures. A lot of our the legal protections and everything, because when the laws were, in my opinion, written to benefit a very, very select few, but when that benefit is spread around to everybody and everyone realizes how broken it is, I think the game's going to that's going to necessitate change in the game, in the rules of the game.
I mean, I agree. It'll be interesting to see how those changes are implemented, considering some landmark, considering the decision that you just mentioned, Citizens United, and all the fallout from that, and it will be interesting to see what happens. And then, how do you see AI working at a global level, as it relates to global governance? So, let's call it over the next, 15, 20, 30 years. How will it impact that?
So focusing on the good, and of course, there's always the naysayers of, Skynet and all that else. So hey, thanks, James Cameron, appreciate you. But no, so I really see it as being able to streamline and reduce the complexity of our way of life, right? Because what artificial intelligence will be able to do at a global scale is to synchronize all the legislative bodies to ensure a continuity of existence across nation states and across trade partners, right? Now let's take that down to the macro level so the audience can kind of get a gist of what I'm talking about. I'm sure every person has heard about some law where it's like you can't tie your elephant up in on Main Street during sundown on the 6th of July or something of that nature, right? All those weird laws that are still on the books that didn't, and all the laws and legal frameworks, that and regulatory frameworks that do not operate in concert with each other but cause friction. Right. And which is, a lot what our judiciary does, right? It like, hey, like, does this law apply or does this law? And, this is where we get into that discussion and it costs millions and billions of dollars and, all that stuff. Well, guess what? Through artificial intelligence and the analysis of these massive, massive data sets, we can then quickly spot and rectify all those points of friction. Right, to where we then have, your global standards, we have, your global conduct, we have your global rules of the game, which then that's just going to benefit every single person, right? Because, imagine a world where doing business, at a hot where doing business on the streets of New York with a hot dog cart is just as easy as flying to, Dubai and engaging in a multi-million or billion-dollar deal. I mean, it's all fluid. And what is that going to do? That's going to increase the velocity of money. That's going to increase the access to capital. That's going to increase the capital inflows and outflows. And legitimately, by smoothing out all these legal and regulatory frameworks and synergizing them, we're going to turbocharge the global economy as we know it, especially as humans through the application of artificial intelligence move up that complexity hierarchy, away from the task and process level to the manager system network enterprise level of what a future worker will be.
It's fantastic, man. I love it. I appreciate your optimism, man. And I appreciate you taking the time to come on today. I think this has been a really good conversation.
Dude, definitely, man.
Yeah, anything else you'd like to add? Any points that you didn't get to make before we close, brother?
No, I think we hit it all. I just really want to stress, the positive aspects of artificial intelligence, right? Because if I got to make a closing pitch, man, it's going to be, remember what it was like at the beginning of the pandemic when everything shut down, and what did we as humans do? We danced, we made videos on the internet, we baked bread. We escaped the drudgery of day-to-day life as we know it, and we were able to exercise our creativeness and exercise, our inspiration and really, come into our own and explore ourselves as humans. And I think that is the ultimate potential of artificial intelligence, or one of them, is that it's going to allow not just humanity, but humanity through the individual level to escape a lot of this modern day drudgery, right? All of this, task level and process level stuff that just time sucks your day and leaves you mentally and emotionally exhausted. Offload that to AI, because guess what? In the age of AI, you're no longer the worker bee, you're the manager now. Right. So you're moving up that complexity hierarchy. And as we move forward in time, right, we mentioned climate change, we talk about the resource scarcity, right? We talk about changing climate, changing environment, we talk about decreasing population. The reason we're able to get where we're at is because of our ability to have all these people specializing in all these roles, right? But we utilize an exorbitant amount of resources to do so. Well, guess what? As resources reduce, as population reduces, that means that we either scale down the complexity hierarchy to meet the level of our environment, or we leverage artificial technology to fill in those gaps that are falling. So that way we stay up here and continue to advance as a society and as a species, to face, the oncoming challenges of climate change, population reduction, and resource scarcity. And so I see artificial intelligence as that vehicle to Star Trek and not our Altered Carbon, because I think once the advantages proliferate throughout the population, the appetite for change and change for the good and for the better is going to be so overwhelming that it will no longer be ignored, and our legislative bodies will be forced to act or fall behind.
Man, I appreciate you, brother. And
Yeah, dude.
I appreciate you coming on today. I like you, I'm an optimist and I'm hopeful that we can move towards this utopian future and avoid this continued slide into dystopianism, man. But I appreciate you. Thanks for listening to Robots and Red Tape, everybody.